All right, well, thank you for staying. This is our final talk of the session. We're going to talk about naivete in science and the ramifications of psychological nativism and cognitive modules on the many worlds interpretation of quantum mechanics. I'm Andrew Lang. Today I'm presenting with Caleb Lutz.
So yes, today we're talking about quantum mechanics, which it seems that most of you probably know a lot more about than I do. My main field of study is mathematics and psychology, and so a lot of this was new to me when I started researching it with Dr. Lang. So for those of you less familiar with quantum mechanics, I want to start off or let you know where we're starting. Quantum mechanics does, in comparison with the rest of physics and a lot of our fields of science, the rules of it behave very differently, most of what we find in other places. And so today we're really looking at how we as humans and as scientists and physicists are approaching quantum mechanics. And so we're looking at that, that approach. And we'll jump into it. We're really looking at how would you put it? I'm not sure. I'm thinking. Forgive me. We're wondering if we're looking at two approaches. We're looking at whether or not one's inborn nature affects the way that they look at quantum mechanics, or whether their development is the main effect for that. And so usually it makes sense, it makes a lot of sense that one's day-to-day experience really affects the way that they think about quantum mechanics. And so because of that, many scientists, many philosophers have proposed that we're really born as blank slates, and as our brains are. As we're coming into the universe, we're really learning as we're going how to approach quantum mechanics, how to approach any field of science. And so the first proponent of that was Aristotle. And I'm going to Aristotle said that we said the mind is, in a sense, potentially whatever is thinkable, but actually it is nothing until it has thought. What it thinks must be in it, just as characters may be said to be on a writing tablet on which as yet nothing stands written. And this is exactly what happens with the mind. Aristotle said that in our approach, we really don't gain any knowledge about the universe, about physics, or even the physics of the microscopic world with quantum mechanics until we actually begin seeing the process in action. Thomas Aquinas built on that when he kind of revived the Aristotelian thought within the church, and Aquinas kind of Christianized it. Sir John Locke actually gave the blank slate theory the name tabula rasa, which is just the Latin form of it. Jean-Jacques Rousseau was a huge advocate that men are born completely good, completely natural, undirtied almost by society around them and unbiased by society until they begin seeing all of the theories around them. And then society will taint that and bias that. And then Joseph Stalin, of course. Opponents of that, Plato, Aristotle's mentor, St. Augustine, Descartes, who is our deductive thinker, Yeah. I am Rand, our modern ethical egoist, and then Pinker, Chomsky, Spelke, and Hood, all of which we'll hear a lot about today as we go further. These last four are experimental theorists, and much more modern, who have actually are looking into what underlies what we are actually born with. They propose that instead of being born as blank slates, that we must have some sort of structure with which we judge the world when we come into it to form a framework by which to continue to judge that and to come to understand deeper, more complicated theories. So the question is, if we're not born with a blank slate, if we are born with certain aspects that allow us to judge our world, then what would those be? What is hardwired into our brains to allow us to perceive physics? And so many of the things, probably the first one that came to light was that there has to be an underlying structure for language to come into play. And I'm sure many of you have heard that at a very young age, you're able to start learning language, and that's actually the optimal time to learn language because you have the cognitive structure in play with which you can begin gaining them very quickly. Without that inborn ability, it would be impossible to understand one language or many at once. Pinker and Chomsky are the main ones who've delved into a ton of both theory and experimental evidence there. Then cognitive modules for mathematics. Leibniz was mainly both, he worked out that there must be underlying structure, underlying cognitive modules there, mainly in theory, but that's been verified more recently. We now believe that you must have an underlying supernatural belief with which you come to experience and judge the world. That's especially developed in our presentation by Bruce Hood, even though now the entire cognitive science of religion really explores that. And then finally, what we're mainly talking about today is naive physics, what our basic understanding of physics are that eventually lead to us perceiving quantum mechanics in certain ways. And we will jump into Spelke's core object knowledge very soon. And so here are a few examples of naive physics, most of which should seem very familiar to you. They're, cognitive modules kind of have two definitions. One is just the common sense way with which most people approach whatever they're dealing with at that point. And then the other is really what an infant is born with, those structures with which they're able to build upon. And so not only are these common sense, but it also seems that infants now actually have these as soon as they're born, or at least very, very shortly after birth. Many of these are correct. A lifted object will fall directly to the ground, but at the same time, they can be built upon. For instance, if there's something beneath it that'll carry it another direction, the object won't fall straight down. That law can be superseded. And that makes sense to us now because we've built upon that basal structure. But at birth, which we'll see very closely, that cognitive module is so strong that children believe objects should fall straight down anyway. We're actually going to pull up video. So this is developmental psychologist Bruce Hood. He's looking at how young children perceive that when objects are dropped, they fall directly below. Or he's trying to see how strong of a belief that is. And so what he's got here set up is an apparatus. He can drop a ball into any of three slots, and he's going to let the child try to figure out which slot it's going to fall into. We will see.
Where is it?
Switch the tube around to show that it's not just that first hole. There we go.
Okay.
It's interesting because it's not just one child that does that. All children believe that those objects should fall straight down until they learn that certain laws will supersede that. But we're not just looking at these just because they're fun to watch and fun to see children mess up and do that over and over again. We're really looking at this because we believe that many of these biases proceed into adulthood and really affect the way that we look at new theories. So I'm going to talk very quickly about the process of the development of cognitive modules, how they're rewired over time, and really the main theorists that we, his theories are very useful here, is Piaget, who began exploring children's development, their cognitive development, around the 1940s, I believe. He talked about the process of adaption, in which he talked about two main components of that. There's assimilation, in which a child will experience something new and be like, oh, okay, that fits into what I already know about it. And it's very easy to continue on learning that way. But then there are some things that are just so starkly different that they can't fit it into what they already know. And then they do one of two things. They either reject it completely until they see it again and again and realize they have to accept it somehow. Or the second one would be at that point when they accommodate and they change the way that they perceive everything to fit that new structure. So we see that even in physics. We've also want to mention Lane and Harris's counterintuition. They this actually came out within the last year, a study of how scientists develop and take on notions that seem very counterintuitive to them. And they found that a cognitive, the cognitive optimal, I think they said, was where facts are minimally counterintuitive. So something is different than one perceives, but it's just slightly enough different than one is able to adapt to that and fit that change with something that they already see. They also found the second main important component of that was that when someone is able to visualize it, even if it's very different than what they expected, if they're actually able to see it in front of them, then they're able to adapt more easily. And then probably the main reason why we're talking about this now, about cognitive modules and those biases proceeding into adulthood, is because McCloskey's experiment with a curvilinear bias, where both McCloskey and several others have showed that when both scientists and non-scientists are put under time pressure, and they're made to answer questions about the way the world works, they usually revert back to their cognitive bias, those things that they just began perceiving at childhood. Even with a ton of schooling, they will still revert back to those basal theories. And that's really not concerning necessarily, but it does show that those biases do remain, no matter how much schooling you have. McCloskey showed that with the curvilinear bias, where a lot of people think the bias would be that when you swing an object and you release it at a certain point, that object will follow a curved path. Whereas in physics, we know it will really follow a straight path tangent to where it's released. But one very fascinating example that we're going to look at really quickly before I hand it over to Dr. Lang is this curvilinear bias in Hollywood.
Keep talking.
How much do you want?
I want to be curved with the bulb.
Okay, we won't go through the rest of that. So what we are looking at now is how these cognitive biases will affect quantum mechanics and different views of that. The last thing I'm going to mention before we go on is the research of Elizabeth Spelke, who is an infant psychologist, particularly focused on naive physics. And so after many years of experience, I've looked at research of hers at least 20 years back. She's developed these four basic rules, four foundations of core object knowledge that she believes all children have. And these are useful because they allow children to develop later theories. But we'll see if this strikes a chord with any of you and you recognize how these might affect our views of quantum mechanics. So objects do not go in and out of existence. Objects are bounded, so they do not break up and come back together. They move on continuous paths. They don't teleport. Teleportation is more of a superhero capability in our minds. It seems magical. And then they generally only move when something else makes them move. And with that, just bear all of these in mind. I'm going to hand it over to Dr. Lang. Thank you all.
So child psychologists have noticed that children really are born with innate physics already. They have the structures within their brains. And that later on that develops as a child ages, around 5 or 6 year olds, into what, when we study the history of physics, it's really Aristotelian physics is what we're born with. And Newtonian is actually in advance. But it's not too much in advance because it kind of fits in the cognitive module. But what really goes against the cognitive module is quantum mechanics. And so with Spelke's rules, we see quantum mechanics do not go in and out. Objects actually do go in and out of existence in quantum mechanics. And they actually, so this is totally opposite to our inbuilt core knowledge. In quantum mechanics, objects are not bounded. They do break apart and then come back together again. In quantum mechanics, objects do not move on continuous paths. They can teleport from one part of the room to another. For example, if you're familiar with particles in a box, you can see the particle on one side and you can see it on the other side. But for the particular energy levels there, it's excluded from ever being in the middle. You will never see it cross from one side to the other. You look at it, it's on one side. You look away, you look at it again, it's on the other side. But no matter how many times you look away and look back, you will never see it in the middle. It just goes from one side to the other. That's strange if you've never, it's hard to believe almost. In quantum mechanics, objects actually do move all the time. It's also impossible to make them stand still. And so when you read Spelke's core object, these are actually what infants are born with, and then later on they developed into Aristotelian. But the core object knowledge, the fundamental innate idea of what we know about physics when we're born, is very counterintuitive. So that means when we see quantum mechanics, it appears strange, bizarre, weird, magical, spooky, because things that do not match our innatism appear like those things, supernatural. Okay, and so when we interpret quantum mechanics, there's two main competing interpretations. The first one, the Copenhagen interpretation, basically presupposes that the underlying reality of nature is this indeterminism, the non-locality, really. But when you study what that really implies, that just does not sit well with your innate, how you were born. And so many people, including Einstein, were very against this idea of the Copenhagen interpretation. And so, for example, Einstein says, quantum mechanics is certainly imposing, but an inner voice tells me that it's not yet the real thing. The theory says a lot, but does not really bring us any closer to the secret of the old one. I, at any rate, am convinced that he does not throw dice. And there's other quotes as well. And Einstein even coined the quantum entanglement, as we know it, as spooky action at a distance. An alternative with hidden variables, we won't have time to go into that, but the up and rising interpretation is the many worlds interpretation, the multiverse interpretation, where that rather than the universe at the subatomic level really being non-local, that we actually resolve that problem by having the universe split at every quantum interaction. And that seems to be more acceptable. There is some technical issues that go with wave function collapse to do with that as well. But we are proposing that actually is something that's more acceptable to our brains than this idea of non-locality, which just seems strange. Spooky. Yes, and so often I teach quantum mechanics, and I teach quantum mechanics both to the physics students and to non-physics students. And quantum mechanics is hard to understand, but it's not just hard to understand. Year after year, especially with the non-physics students, and then also I've presented this to the faculty, non-physics faculty, that they say, no, it can't really be like that, right? It doesn't really do that. It's actually not just difficult to understand, it's actually hard to believe. And so we're proposing that a lot of physicists are moving towards the many worlds interpretation. Doesn't mean that they're wrong, but they're not aware of their underlying cognitive bias. We believe that they're actually biased towards the many worlds interpretation. Doesn't mean that they're wrong, but they are not aware, at least till our paper gets published, that of this bias.
Those other universes will collapse.
That's right. That's right. All right, thank you.
I have a question about the children thinking that heavier objects fall faster. Now, an infant to say something like that would imply they know something about the concept of speed. I'm wondering if they are really thinking that they fall faster, or are they just thinking they fall harder, which is actually true. So how does that fit into their thinking and the development of physics?
I think it's hard to ask them. Yes. I didn't mean that. I think psychologists are able to tell when something is confusing to an infant, when they see something happen, the infinite stares at it, and they look at it longer. They measure the time that an infant is studying that phenomenon. So if they drop two tennis balls with each other and they fall at the same rate, the little baby's like, okay, yeah, whatever. If they bob a piece of paper and they do that, if they make some experiment where something very heavy to the child drops at the same rate as something very light, the infant will stare at that. And that'll seem very strange to them. But it is impossible to ask them whether that's a heaviness problem or whether that's an intuitive knowledge of speed.
And the falling at different rates, that's really Aristotelian physics, and that wasn't dispelled until Galileo.
Relating to that, so when I'm thinking about the possible issue between hardwired versus experiential. Let's say that a child was born in the International Space Station. Would gravity be the odd occurrence then? Just from experience there, things are going to float and not move. If I drop them, I expect it to be still if I grow up on the ISS.
Yeah.
Any volunteers?
Yeah, we don't expect that a child born in space would have different cognitive structures. They would have the same cognitive structures, and the cognitive structures that infants are born with help them to survive on the Earth. And so anything that is different from those cognitive structures, they would actually have to learn in space.
Yeah, if Spelke's proposal is correct, then they would have those exact same cognitive modules that they have here. But at the same time, all of their experience would be violating that and contradict it. And so I would think very quickly that would become the new normal.
All right, last question.
I was just wondering, a number of years ago, there's a study done by Harvard that ended up in a video. It was called Universe of Their Own, and it seems like in which it wasn't so much innate perceptions of the universe, but more people's own mental constructions of what the universe is like and how difficult it is for them to move out of that. And rather than actually change their view, their previous paradigm, they just incorporate the new information in a weird way into their old paradigm and refuse to change the paradigm.
That would be Piaget's adaption model of assimilation, where they're confused by it, and so they want to reject it, but they probably see people that they respect, and they think, oh, they're scientists, they know a lot, so I have to accept this somehow. And so they keep their own beliefs, but then they assimilate that in what seems like a very weird way to us, but to them it's probably the only thing that makes sense at that point. So until they would see it over and over again and could actually connect where they're already at with what the scientist knows, they're not going to not be weird anymore. That's going to be a contradiction to them.
All right, thank you very much.